everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two lovely sponsors this week, lynda.com. So go to lynda.com/shoptalk, huge learning resource on the web, and Environments for Humans, who have their upcoming JS Summit at jssummit.com. We'll tell you about those a little later in the show. But for now, don't panic, they'll be paid for most of us. Do our theme song too. I was going to do the JS Chairman.
Now sing over this one.
I can't do it. It's such a weird theme song.
All right. You're listening to the Shop Talk Show, a podcast about fart sounds. And I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hey, everybody. If that beginning was weird, it's because this is a very special show where it's a crossover show, and it's kind of like some of that. Yeah, that's always a really long one. It's like Dave always does the CSI analogy, but I'll use a different one. It's like if the actors from like Eureka are on like Warehouse 51 or whatever, and then you're like, awesome, my two favorite shows collide. It's like that.
Six people in America resonate.
I know. This analogy. Yeah, but those are nerdy shows. I thought it might work for our audience. We have with us Merrick Christensen. Hey, Merrick.
Hey.
What's up? And Jameson Dance.
Hello, friends.
Both from the podcast JS Jabber, which is no joke. I've listened to every single one. I'm a big fan of it because it's a good companion to Shop Talk Show, because I feel like it's all about JavaScript, and they really get into it and get guests on that are relevant to the times of JavaScript and whatever kind of interesting things are happening in the world of JavaScript, and just go at it. And then, you know, there's a bunch of them. So I know we have Merrick and Jameson today, but there's Charles, and there's like six of you, isn't there? Or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
A little army.
Yeah, I don't know if like a Skype connection could handle all the JS Jabber panelists.
And is it just whoever can make it, or you just kind of choose? And how do you decide who's going to be on each week?
Honestly, it's kind of whoever can be on is on. Some of them are more stable. Like Jameson is a real stable candidate. I have a real hard time waking up in the morning, so sometimes I won't make it to the noon episode.
And it's kind of nice how you just all, I don't know, it's like the guest just talks about their thing while I feel like there's four people like, you know, tapping their fingers together, thinking of good questions to ask, and then you all get to ask him. So it's good. So anyway, listen to JS Jabber. I think it's just jsjabber.com. And then
if I was going to start listening to JS Jabber today, Merrick or Jameson, what episode should I tune into?
I have an answer for that.
What's your tops?
Oh man,
I've never thought of that.
You know, we've had some real controversial ones where we've had kind of like, you know, Yehuda Katz and Jeremy Ashkenaz get on there and kind of battle about the MVC stuff. My personal favorites are the ones where we've talked to some of the lower level guys like Dave Herman. We did he's on the ECMAScript committee or the research lab over at Mozilla. And we talked to him about his book, Effective JS, which is probably my favorite JavaScript book of all time. And he was just I love those lower level sort of nitty gritty episodes that we can talk about things that there's not a blog post on, you know?
Yeah.
I really liked the recent one we did with John David Dalton too, about Lodash.
Yeah.
Just so obsessed with performance. It was pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
It was good. And there's a little bit of inherent drama in it because of his like competitive spirit with underscore.
Yeah.
And there was even drama in this.
Throw down the gauntlet.
Yeah. I love that guy though. I mean, he is incredible.
Yeah, it's funny the mind share of it, which you guys got into on the show, which is pretty interesting in that, in like all blog posts are starting to like it's hyphenated or put a slash between those two things. You never just write like underscore anymore. You always write underscore slash Lodash.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I just did that in a post. And even the latest one on JS Hint was a little drama-y, you know, like you know, who cares about what some guy from eBay thinks, you know, when he was kind of like smack talking JS Lint.
Well, okay. So that's a secret tactic, because some guest will insult someone, and then the person that was insulted will talk to us and be like, I've got to rebut this. And then you get another guest.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did a show on Bacon.js, and we had, which is a reactive like JavaScript library. And, the guy that does RxJS, Matt, I can't even say his last name. It's crazy, but he reached out on Twitter and he's like, most one-sided show ever, you know? And, I was like, great. You want to come on for an episode? Dude, we got to get a soundboard. That's my number one takeaway from this episode.
That sounds like a great strategy. So I would like to go on record and say Barack Obama is really terrible at JavaScript.
I don't know, dude. I hear he's going to single-handedly fix healthcare.gov.
Yeah, is he?
He's the A-team.
He's going to tech surge it, and it's just going to totally tech surge.
I saw him in the Vim IRC the other night.
Please, how do I get out of Vim? Was his
So, Jameson, you're at ITV. What is that?
I am. It's a social TV startup. We've been a little bit stealthy for a while. We've been building lots of APIs that power other companies' stuff, so we haven't been on the front lines. But we actually just yesterday purchased another startup, so we're kind of forming this Megatron company.
Cool. Like it?
Yeah, it's great. It's small enough that there's plenty of room for experimentation, but big enough that we get to deal with some scaling problems and stuff. So it's really fun.
Cool. And where do you work, Merrick? Are you on your own or for a place?
I work at a company called Domo.
Domo. Okay.
Yes, Domo.
Is that Japanese based?
Actually, we have an office in Japanese. The guy that started the company, he, you know, spent 2 years in service over in Japan, and I think he kind of wanted to bring those ties back to the company. So that you're right. Domo, for those that are listening and are like, why did he ask that? It's thank you in Japanese. So.
Awesome.
Dave has some Japanese stuff.
A little bit. I'm a Japanologist.
Really? Are you a Japanologist in that you like anime and LARPing? Or
No. Well, I majored in anime in college. I majored in Japanese. Wow. Yeah.
Seriously?
So, yeah.
That's awesome,
and I lived there 3 years. Yeah, pretty weird. It's a cool party trick, though. Pretty cool party trick.
Yeah, we got to... That's awesome.
And there's a Utah connection, right? Like almost all of you are from Utah, if not all of you.
Yeah, JavaScript Jabber actually started because I was talking about starting a JavaScript podcast. And originally I thought it would just be like the Utah JavaScript podcast or some dumb name like that. And Chuck is the podcast mastermind. He's got Ruby Rogues and a bunch of other ones too.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of heard that I wanted to and brought a bunch of experience to it. And because he's kind of well known, we just got some really good people on immediately. So,
and are you guys in
jump started
in Provo? Do you have the Google Fibers yet?
I actually live in Provo, yeah, but I don't have it yet.
I don't think anyone has it yet, but you can start to see sort of like Google Fiber offices opening up.
So Austin's going to get it, and I live in Austin, and I heard that there was a Google Fiber contractor in somebody's yard in my neighborhood the other day. So things are about to get wicked fast. Oh, really?
Yeah, someone at work already has it, but they bought a fiber network, so they don't have to build it all from scratch. So it's a little faster, I think, to get off the ground.
There you go. Well, cool. Awesome.
We have one question here from Mr. Isaac Vargas who says Pontiac G6 2006 makes a knocking sounds only when I'm turning right and accelerating, has an intermediate shaft, link pin, sway bar links, the CV joints need replaced. I'm not sure what to do or replace. We get some of these great. Oh yeah, you got an answer for him?
Well, yeah, I'm going to ask my brother Clack.
Yeah.
We get some stray questions from Car Talk. So people,
I would like to take a shot at answering this. Pontiac G6, best-selling car in America in 2006.
Was it?
No. I think it was the Hummer.
I think there's a squirrel in your engine, dude.
That's what it sounds like. Sounds like you got a snake or a squirrel crawled up in your air filter.
Does it have all its wheels? Because I know cars need four wheels.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
We'll do a follow-up on that one.
It's when he's turning right, so I'm going to say the right side of the car needs to be taken off and replaced.
Turn off and on the right side of the car.
And that's good. That's good. All right. Well, so we have a little bit of drama I wanted to mention today, just as we're kind of going through. We won't talk about it too much today, but I don't know if you guys saw the article by Luke Rubluski about responsive web design relying too much on screen size. Luke W. basically says responsive web design is not enough because it can't deal with Google Glass.
Oh my gosh.
That's some zeroth world problems right there.
Yeah, but
it affects tens of peoples, guys.
Luke's point is that there's the future of devices is weird, and screen size is going to be an increasingly not good metric to use for that thing. Although I'm very guilty of using it almost exclusively on my projects now. Just because
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. I don't know. And then Ethan Marcotte responded. This is why it's in the hot drama section, is because it got to be some fun little bloggy back and forth stuff. So I don't know. Do you want to recap it, Dave?
Luke W is like, it doesn't work on TVs and Google Glass or smart TVs. And then Ethan's like, it's just a foundation for websites. You know, like if you want to go down that road of targeting, sure, do what you want to do. And then like PPK got involved and he's like, yeah, you can't do anything. And so maybe here's how we could target it by input modes. Nope. Like, you know, media TV or whatever, you can't do that because those are just a bunch of lies and totally ignored. And then he was like, event handlers. So like a TV wouldn't have a mouse pointer. Maybe that's never probably true, but you could maybe detect mouse move or something. I don't know. But then that's where there was a counter rebuttal by Luke W, where he's just kind of trying to clarify his point a little bit more. But I don't know. For me, it's like responsive web design can only respond to what it knows, right? It's not like it can only respond to that conversation. It can't really like just be like, oh, you are obviously a TV, so I'm going to serve you a special TV website.
I see now you're carving me into a tree. This is how I handle this kind of bark. how far are we going to take that responsive stuff?
It's not like we have these really good detects that we're not using. The reason that we're not handling all this stuff is we can't tell. It's just, there's no good metrics to use. You know, it's like we'll just test for tap. We'll touch, you know, events or whatever. Well, you can't do that. It's hardly or unreliable. And even if you could, there's screens that support both now. So how do you deal with that? And it's like, these are really hard problems to solve. And we just don't have good answers yet is the point of all this stuff.
But like when you're on a TV or a Google Glass, do you really want like a totally different website? Maybe. I don't know. I don't use them, so I don't really know. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in the 30 seconds I've been thinking about this since you started talking about it, my really uninformed opinion is that I'm glad people like Luke are thinking about this, because I am so far behind him. Like, he is on the front lines. I'm thinking about, how do I make my own stuff responsive? Because I just don't know it that well. But I mean, he's like chopping through the forest with a machete way ahead of me. So I'm just glad someone's thinking about the hard stuff already.
Yeah, you let people like take bullets, like Brian LaRue or somebody.
Yeah.
Let them take bullets and then...
Like in First Kid.
Okay, well, let's wrap that one up. The other one was... this kind of theme of offline first. I don't know if you caught that, but Zeldman tweeted out, offline first is the new progressive enhancement. And then a company called Hoodie, which has like a MVC, JavaScript MVC, they kind of were talking about offline first is say hello to offline first. That's like their goal for their framework working offline.
It doesn't mean that your website works without an internet connection, period, though, right? I mean, that's what's such a confusing term to me. I'm like, I don't know where I come from.
Well, it's like assuming your internet connection is crappy, like is 3G or hotel Wi-Fi. That's kind of the like base.
It still needs to make that first request, though, right? To get anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's assuming that the first request works, but the second one doesn't. Is that what they mean by
the first request works, and then you could go into a tunnel?
Yeah. Sure. Well, I think is the idea is for long-lived apps, right? Like, okay, I'm going to keep this. Like, you install an app on your like a web app on your phone. If it's long-lived, you need to be able to handle, you know, being on an airplane and stuff like that.
Right. So you kind of don't even notice when you don't have a connection because it's kind of. In a perfect world, it's kind of handling stuff for you. And then when it gets connection again, it just scooches back up. That's clever. Is that what did you read? I don't know. Have you heard of this philosophy before?
I've definitely heard of it. I think Hoodie is like a really cool project because they're also part of this no backend architecture idea, which is like, wait a second. Why do we need backend stuff for like the majority of web services we're building? So I think Hoodie's doing some like really kind of just terribly interesting things, but you know, I don't know about this offline first thing because I know that people have run into a lot of problems trying to do that, like just local storage limitations across devices and things like that. But mm-hmm. I think it's a really cool idea. I think it's a huge undertaking for an existing app to suddenly be like, hey guys, we're going offline first, you know, like
for sure.
But I think it's cool. I think Hoodie's a very cool project.
I think they should change the name to Offline Second, because if it's offline first, that means it gets to your phone without you being online.
That's what's bothering me about it.
So yeah. Like online first and then offline second.
Eventually offline.
Longer. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if it was offline first, it would be like a CD.
It's so true. So true.
This is the next pathway.
All right.
But you can't get in a book apart title without saying something first.
Yeah, you gotta do something crazy.
That's true.
You got so much slack for that, Dave. That was hilarious. It made it funny to me.
Yeah, I built a book apart book generator on CodePen. You can go find it. And it's you can make your own a book apart book, but I may be upset.
They did not love that.
Jason and Mandy, so I apologize. Oops. Yeah. All right.
Well, Q&A time. How about that? Already got a final thought?
No, I was just saying, speaking of the drama section, I was surprised you guys have a drama section.
Yeah, it's just free fodder. Well, it's also just every week our industry finds something to have a hissy fit about. So it's kind of entertaining.
Yeah, we always love picking fights about seemingly irrelevant things.
And they're always so much gray area.
I am bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Who's trying to introduce some reason? I'm downvoting this guy.
Maybe you could try and take this into like the Fox News direction for tech podcasts, where you just become super partisan and like,
oh, that would be great.
Really antagonistic.
Yeah, just attack people and bring on guests. So the drama section has a guest, and then you just call them stupid. And
I want
that's good.
All right, next season, Dave. Next season.
Next season, it gets more drama. All right.
A lot of good questions this week. I'm excited to get into it, and I guess I'll just do that then. How about that? Tyler Pope asks, I've been doing front-end web development for a few years. I'm in the process of building my first real web app. At this point in the project, it seems necessary to add user authentication, right? So login password. I am writing the app in PHP. I'm not using any frameworks. Since security is a big concern, I want to make sure that I go about adding authentication correctly. Good for you, Tyler. Of course, that needs to be secure. There's lots of aspects of security which we can talk about. I've been researching the best way to handle authentication and many have suggested using some pre-written scripts while others just suggest I use a framework. What should Tyler do?
I think it depends on what his goals are. If he's doing this project to learn stuff, I think writing your own authentication is like a stepping stone to being a web developer.
Would you be upfront about that? Then, I mean, aren't you asking for some, isn't there some assumption of security when you sign up for a brand new web app? And you're like, wouldn't you be worried if this was the first, yeah. if that developer's yeah, first so time?
Yeah. It depends if he's like selling this or, I mean, yeah, it depends on his goal for it. If he's trying to make an actual product out of it, then probably not. But it's really helpful to know how it works at least. And that helps you pick which tool you're going to use to implement it, even if you're not writing it yourself.
Yeah. No, I think
that's kind of waffled.
No, I think, I mean, look at this Adobe scandal and some of the crazy things Adobe was doing, right? Like the way they were storing things in the database.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you don't know anything about authentication, cause you've never done it, like you don't even know that that's bad. Like,
oh, right.
You might just store passwords in plain text.
I totally agree. But I think avoiding doing something because it's scary or hard or risky, is a great way to rob yourself to learn, you know? I think like there are some like things like you never store a password in plain text. You always
yeah, let's
salt
do the
a
list.
Password.
Let's do the list. It's salt the password, no plain text. What else? If you're gonna write this from scratch.
You hash it with a slow hashing algorithm like bcrypt or something, not MD5.
Mm-hmm. and ideally, you know, you salt it before you're going to hash it. So I'm assuming this guy doesn't he hasn't done anything like this before, but you would salt it before you hash it, and then you'd store
salt
it.
Salt means add some.
What a salt is.
Yeah, maybe real quick. Like.
Yeah, yeah. Jameson, you want to take a salt? The salt.
Sure. So you just take some string. Maybe it's like their username or some like the timestamp they first create their account or something, and you prepend it to their password before you create the hash.
So they're That's different so every time. The salt is different on every entry.
It should be different on every account. Because you're trying to prevent people from being able to create a rainbow table where they just hash every like word in the dictionary and then create a bunch of hashes that they can then check your hash against if they steal your database and get your password out. So if your actual hash you store in the database is your password plus some string of text, then they can't create this lookup table for everyone's password. They have to try each password individually.
I see.
Because there's like these different numbers of, you know, combinations. The other thing is that you see a lot of people think, oh, I need to be able to encrypt their password so that way I can decrypt it and send it to them if they need to reset their or get their password back. But you want to use and you see that all the time, right? Like you'll be using a service and you'll click the reset password link and they'll send you your password in an email and you're just like, oh my gosh. Well, like it's kind of this secret to like, okay, these guys didn't know what they're doing.
That's the tell.
But yeah, that's one of the big things is use a hashing algorithm, which is, you know, unidirectional rather than an encryption algorithm, which is bidirectional.
Mm-hmm. And then presumably like HTTPS on the login screen.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, of course to us, right? But this checklist is getting longer and longer and longer, isn't it? So it's funny that, you know, it's like Tyler, you know, that's why people are telling you to use a framework is because this checklist, and I'm sure we haven't hit all of it quite yet to do a totally perfect system.
You've got to like start building out the session and stuff from there.
Yeah,
right?
It's true. And I think maybe I'm making some unfair assumptions about Tyler's goals. Like maybe he doesn't want to understand that stuff. He just wants to build a product, you know?
It could be, yeah.
But building a product and not understanding it is dangerous too. I've done that.
I mean, there's a little tell that Tyler's building this first real web app and he's not using a framework. He probably made the choice. I mean, I'm putting words in Tyler's mouth here too, but he probably, frameworks are so prevalent. He probably specifically chose not to use one.
Yeah. And the fact that he explicitly said, I'm not using a framework is indicative that he's doing it on purpose.
Pretty far.
Right.
Yeah. I guess we need to know, is Tyler a level one developer or level two developer? Certified Microsoft developer.
Has he passed the W3C Schools HTML developer certification?
At what page in W3 Schools are you right now, Tyler?
Just one last thing I want to say about this is it applies to security in general, is I know just enough about cryptography and security to know that I don't know enough about it. Like,
yeah,
there's always someone smarter than you, and there's, if there's any money at all in breaking your security, then it will probably be broken. So it's really nice to know stuff about it, but it's also really nice to offload all the hard stuff to people that have spent way more time than you thinking about it.
Indeed.
Because, I mean, all the recent revelations from the NSA and stuff, we kind of figured out that there's no perfectly secure system. Even if all your login stuff is secure, they can just like tap your fiber and yeah. have all your data. So, I mean, it's just, it's like a cost benefit thing.
Yeah. Like, And also, like, a lot of it depends on the type of system you're building. Like, you know, if you're taking credit cards, there's a whole new set of rules you have to play by, and it does get really hairy. And I know I'm just a noob, you know.
What do you guys think about different kinds of authentication, like OAuth through Twitter or something like that? Is that
it's convenient route for the user? I've yet to successfully implement OAuth. This is confession time. It's always been other people on my team, and
the wall of shame.
I've just shed sad tears and been a shoulder for them to lean on. So it seems pretty complicated, but it's super convenient for me as a user. Like, I use OAuth all the time to log into other sites. I think it's cool.
You know, I've implemented OAuth, and like, it is kind of a pain because you have to create endpoints for the, I mean, it's an HTTP communication, so they have to be able to communicate back, and so you have to have services up that they can hit. But the real problem I have with OAuth is the apps can often request way more than they actually need.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm a little bit hurt by this because I'm supposed to be like a computer nerd, right? And then a few weeks ago, some guy hits me up, on email, and he goes, "Bro, I think your Twitter account got hacked." And I was sending all these.
Or you're tweeting some sweet.
Yeah,
deals.
I was sending all these sweet deals for weight loss stuff via direct messages, and I realized it was the apps. It was one of the apps like had leaked the token, and it was because I went to some website, you know, and accepted because I think, oh, it's Twitter, I'm safe, you know, but those apps can still mess with your Twitter account at that point, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Well, interesting.
I just thought of this in the 30 seconds I've been thinking about it. That you should not offer sign up via any via OAuth, via Twitter, GitHub, or whatever. You should only offer login through it. So you have to log in first through a system, and then after you've signed up, so you have a password and you have some way to log in without any of these services, if you need to, then you can link up accounts. And once they're linked up, then you can click to sign in through them. So it's still convenient for the user. But then there's never that risk that you like click sign in through Twitter, but on this app, you forgot which one you used and it was really GitHub and it creates a new account for you and all that confusion junk.
Yeah.
You get rid of that. You can only log in.
I hate that. That's such a good point.
That's really cool.
Let's do a sponsor if we can. No, you finish up, Jameson, and then we'll do it.
I just said one person in chat mentioned the difference between authentication and authorization. That's like a 30-second thing that's valuable too. Authentication is telling who you are. So you're saying, I am this user. And then that's separate from authorization, which is the permissions you have. So what you can do on the site. And that's like a whole other issue. We haven't really even talked about it at all. But you can attack people or attack sites by spoofing authorization, not authentication as well. And that's a bunch of other security concerns too. So stuff like, is hard.
Like I can log into CodePen, but I can't delete other people's CodePens. But one hack would be to like fake my authorization level to where I'm super user
because
Chris
I Poyer, can because I'm an admin.
And then I can delete everybody.
Yep.
I assume Rails handles that for me.
Security.
Just kidding. We think about
it
a lot.
Let's go shopping.
Lynda.com is our sponsor
protection
this week. Go to.
Go ahead.
I'll start over. Require hacker defense.
You know, what if you wanted to learn about security? I bet there is a course on it at lynda.com. I actually don't even know, but I assume there is because there's over 2,000 courses on lynda.com. That's lynda.com/shoptalk. They have over 2 million active members, which is a crazy number to me. It's like what this certainly is the internet's largest learning resource. They have all this web nerd stuff that we talk about, which is great. So if you want to up your game in a CMS or literally even abstract concepts like user experience, they have courses with that on on lynda.com. They have courses on Objective-C and stuff if you want to get into the iPhone stuff. So it's pretty cool. And then all that other stuff that I like to mention on this show, because it's like, you know, a lot of us know we don't really need a course on HTML, but we might have an interest in photography or that type of thing. And those kind of courses are available on lynda.com. You have access to the whole library. If you sign up, starts at $25 a month, and you get a week free if you do it at the /shoptalk URL. So thanks for sponsoring Lynda. Let's do some more questions.
All right. Next question comes from Adam Davidson. I would like to lazy load images on my website to speed up performance. However, I am concerned about the fallback issues as the images are loaded in via JavaScript without users without JavaScript will get no images. Also, I'm not sure if the images will get indexed by Google, of course, because they wouldn't be in the DOM. Will putting images in a NoScript tag solve this problem? What's your view on this?
I don't know if it'll solve the problem. I do know that lazy loading of images is super frustrating as a user if it's not done well. There's this website called usgamer.net. I play video games. They talk about video games. They lazy load all their images. And by default, they have like a set gray box that's a set size. And you scroll down and then the image loads in ahead of you and like shifts where you're scrolled to. And it's just the worst experience in the world. So I kind of hate lazy loading images.
Has an image lazy loader ever worked in the history of the internet? is my first question. But
how do you do it? Presumably like there's a div or something, not an image tag with a source, because that's what they're trying to beat. As soon as there's image with a source attribute in the HTML, the preloader is going to get it and it's going to start downloading. And that's what they're trying to avoid. They're like,
go ahead. I was just thinking, like, first off, he wants to know what it, to be indexed by Google. Is he talking about Google Images or is he talking about the alternative text?
Presumably Google Images, let's say.
Right.
And maybe the alt text, but here's another sub question, which let me just get us way off track just right away. Is how good of traffic is Google Image Search traffic anyway? I would like to see somebody that's trying to,
that's
like,
so true.
Wouldn't you want to like block yourself from that?
Ever.
Yeah, right.
Google Images. I just copy paste them in chat. That's all I use it for.
I know. Or illegally. It's either for chat or to use illegally on a project. anyway, so like, how do you want that kind of traffic anyway? How important is that? I mean, maybe it's super important to you. I don't know. I don't want to tell you.
For some people,
not.
It's important. Like fashion or, you know.
Oh, I'm seeing
Pinterest.
The gray box.
Yeah, Pinterest, probably. That's probably where all the Pinterest pictures come from.
Dude, this gray box thing on US Gamer is hilarious. It takes forever, yeah. And they're incorrectly sized.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, like I feel like Pinterest does lazy loading of images as well, and those are obviously indexable. So they must be indexing out, like using the individual pages where the image is not lazily loaded rather than this catalog page of images.
And what's the goal? Is it to save you bandwidth is the point, right? Like it's for you, not for users, clearly.
Well, faster first paint.
Oh, so yeah, it is for save and you, faster first you paint. Know. Okay. So if faster first paint is your goal, it could be that you could be doing the opposite. You could do some prefetching, right? Like if you're on Pinterest, you could prefetch the higher res version of all these like way later. And if they just leave the browser open, window.load has fired. You could start like just sucking down higher res things. So if they were to click on them, it's bigger. I don't know if that's, I don't know. I'm just riffing now, but I don't know. Right. If speed is the only goal, I thought it was more like I'm sick of paying $32 a month for this bandwidth.
I wish, you know, his question about NoScript is interesting because I don't know if the browser will try, because Chrome does some interesting things where they'll try to download the images as you're typing it into the URL bar, right? Like they'll be like, okay, here's some of the requests on that page. I'm going to go start making them.
Really?
Chrome is amazing.
It's terrifying. Chrome is like our robot overlord. Come to rule already, and we just don't even know.
So before you've even hit return, if you just like start typing Pinterest, kind of, it will already be asking Pinterest for images.
Oh yeah,
Yeah, they do some really fascinating stuff. Yeah, I don't think they'll do it unless you've been to the website before, though. Like, there's some heuristics to it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Oh, man. Now I'm on Pinterest looking at how to tie my shoes differently. Close tab.
Close tab. Yeah, I think historically, like, doing the NoScript thing works. You know, that's the best way to do it. I think, you know, there's also... I do think Google is smart enough to index your images. Oh, like, if that's a concern, like, Google bot has JavaScript enabled. So I wouldn't worry about that too much, but I don't know. Lazy loading is just difficult because it depends on scroll, which either like usgamer.net, it fires super late, or like on iPads, it will never fire until you stop scrolling, like the momentum scrolling, which might never. So
yeah, there's also kind of lots of weird rules to when you lazily load images, right? Like, say you want to lazily load an image and measure it and inject it. You can't measure it unless it's already in the DOM. Like, the behavior of JavaScript on an image that hasn't been injected into the DOM is subtly different than, you know, an image that's already on the page.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you have attributes, though, that are available that have information about that image, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. Or you can do some weird display none hack and do the measuring yourself, but
Which will be slow.
Yeah, it adds a lot of overhead.
Let's just say, Adam, don't do it. Might as well have a solid answer, so there's no wishy-washy answers here.
There's preload and lazy load, or like a lazy load thing in that's getting specced out that may come to browsers eventually.
Really? That's great. I like it when browsers help us with things that we actually need, you know? And a lot of people use this, so maybe there should be some standardized way to have it handle it for us.
Perhaps it might come out. I don't know.
Haley Carlton asks, I'm at the point in my relationship with JavaScript. Is there a sound effect?
LTR. For
that? Where it has started to make sense. That's nice. I've started working with modules and prototypes, but now I want to start unit testing. I understand the concept of unit testing, but actually testing a function that manipulates the DOM is still abstract to me. Do you know of any awesome web or print resources for learning unit testing in JavaScript? I'm going to punt on this.
I'm glad she asked this because I don't know.
This is the final boss at the end of JavaScript. Unit testing DOM-related code.
The final boss. Oh my gosh! And
I have not beaten the final boss yet.
Go ahead.
Can I lay out a scenario and then you can try? Can I lay out a scenario and then you can tell me if that's unit testing or not, or what's difficult about it or whatnot? Let's say you have a function that its whole job is to like hide something on the page, right? So it's like you call this function and then anything with a class name of like settings is supposed to apply to class, and that class name is called hide or something. And now you want to write a test that says like, when I call this function, did that actually happen in the DOM? Would that be what Haley is asking about here, or am I oversimplifying?
So I think it depends on how you're testing that, right? If you're testing it in the context of your whole page, where there's a lot of other things manipulating that same DOM element, that would be more of an integration test, because now you're testing your hiding code as it interacts with the rest of the page. Whereas a unit test would be, I'm going to take an element in a DOM fragment, and I'm going to write a unit test that simply calls hide, and it's going to be isolated. The DOM element will be isolated via like a DOM fragment. Or a document fragment, I'm sorry, and make sure that hide works, right? Like jQuery doesn't – jQuery is full of unit tests that test the DOM because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. But a unit test is going to require that the state is specific to that unit of code.
And what might actually be broken, the right reason you want to write a test like this is because – is so that it works in various states, right? So is it just not, it's just not all that useful to test these isolated states? Is that the point? Or
I'm in the camp that unit tests are for, say the hide function. You make a hide function that's job is to set display none, right? Mm-hmm. You would set up document fragment, you'd write your test, you'd write your code, refactor, and next up is, okay, now I want to put this in my page. Now this is an integration level test where, hey, they called this function and it should have called hide. And is the state correct? And that's more of an integration test because you're checking all of your integration code rather than just the particular unit of code, which is the hide function.
I see. And so that doesn't sound undoable. Is that, why is that so boss level hard?
I actually, I don't feel it's terribly, I oftentimes wonder what in particular people are confusing to make it hard, because it's truthfully not that hard. And maybe I need to do some videos or something, or maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm doing it wrong, but, it's not terribly hard to do. I think it's just, it's hard to do if you come at it from an existing app and say, okay, how do I test this page where I'm calling this function here? Because in the browser, everything's intrinsically global, right? Like the DOM is this giant tree and anything can touch anything. And in JavaScript, you can touch anything in the DOM. And what that does is it creates this big hairy nest that makes it incredibly difficult to unit test. But if you come at it unit test first, integration test later, then it's actually really easy to test these particular units of code.
Okay.
Is it difficult to test like internal methods inside like a plugin or something? Because isn't the scope kind of off there?
So it depends on how much state they need set up around them to work.
Oh, so true.
That can be the hardest part.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the method you're calling has one argument, but it depends on all these constructor arguments being set already.
Yeah.
That's where it
gets
tricky.
Say state like user is logged in or something, like getting a user logged in to test something.
More like this internal jQuery plugin needs a reference to four other elements because it's going to toggle them off, and it needs the ability to call into AJAX with a certain URL, which you have to give it. Like that's kind of like state for that particular unit of code that you would have to mock out. A lot of times it's simpler just to say, okay, I trust this interaction point because it's this third-party vendor and I assume they have their tests and whatnot. So I'm going to use like a library like sign-in to create a spy and essentially listen when that function gets called and just make sure that I'm calling the plugin. That's more what a unit test would do. You're going to say, my code just needs to call these functions, right? Because that's what your code actually does. The integration test, which is higher level, which is way more difficult. It might would have to set up all that state or use like a UI level test to make sure that it just looks and works right.
So what do you guys recommend for like a framework for testing? I know there's Jasmine, there's Mocha, there's Chai Latte, there's all these other ones.
I don't think the framework matters that much.
It doesn't matter, is it, I guess for a noob, like,
yeah,
myself, really.
Right. I think
Jasmine is like the common one, QUnit is the other common one. Mocha is a little bit more node centric, but all of them you'll be able to get it done with.
I think for kind of the noob approach, also it depends on the framework you're using, right? Like, I think so. Jasmine comes with built in assertions, which makes it a little bit easier for the noob, right? Like, it has like expect and equals and asserts and things like that built in. Whereas with Mocha, you're going to have to pair it with an assertion library. So if you're coming at it from like, I don't know what those two things are and, you know, how do I know which one's good and how to use it? Like Chai is actually an assertion library that can be used with Mocha. So
there really is Chai.
Yeah, there is Chai.
Got it.
I think Jasmine is a real easy one. I actually use Mocha because I do like the cross-platform nature of it. It's really easy to use with Node as well as the browser, but.
Nice.
Okay. Cool.
So speaking of JavaScript and testing and stuff, our second and final sponsor is the JavaScript Summit, which is coming up here. So you have to think about if you're going to do this right now and get on the case, because it's November 19th, 20th, and 21st. You can attend all days if you want to, or just one or two or whatever. You know, you can kind of pick and choose what you want to attend day by day. Go to jssummit.com. So I guess there's two S's in a row, jssummit.com. Yeah. And then you'll redirect to an Environments for Human page where you can check it out. So there's tons of talks on it. I wouldn't be surprised if there's one about testing, but even if there isn't, because you all gather together in one big giant test chat room kind of thing where you're watching the speakers, certainly you could talk with other speakers and other attendees about how you do JavaScript testing, perhaps. And there's so many talks. I mean, it's just going to cover every aspect of JavaScript, I would think, with 3 days of talking about it. I'll be hanging out there, I hope, as much as I can on those days. It's pretty cool. You can attend it from anywhere because it's an online thing. That's what the summit are at Environments for Humans. You can attend it from your couch if you feel like it, which is pretty cool. So stuff about Grunt and HTML5 APIs and jQuery UI, including a kind of the state of thing, which is always nice to hear, like when projects are, you know, where they're at, where they're going. I love those kind of talks. So use coupon code SHOPTALK for 20% off that JavaScript summit. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
all right. If you guys got time, well, we got time. Next question is an audio question from Matt Griffin.
Hi, guys. My name's Matt.
Sorry, it's a little loud. I'll turn it down just a tad. Here we go.
Griffin, at Griffin Artworks on Twitter. I'm a front-end developer in Bath, England. And I'd like to think that my skills in front-end are pretty ninja.
Ninja.
However, I've started to wonder whether my JavaScript and PHP in particular could do with a little bit of cleaning up. Everything I know I've learned from just building websites. But with that style of learning comes an urgency which often makes me feel like I may not have picked up on some of the finer points.
That's probably good, hein?
After having learned...
Yeah, so his question is, like, he's a self-learner. He's a ninja. He feels ninja-y. He is learning some JavaScript and PHP, but maybe it's not as tight.
I think the point is that he builds be, right? websites like for clients and under deadlines and you know, just go, 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 build, learn as you go. And then now is thinking, is that the best way to learn? Like, do you get a full understanding of concepts when you're always under the gun like that? Or should, is it better to kind of go back with a scientific eye to clean up your skills? What do you think, guys?
Well, I liked it because I liked that he basically came at it being like, you know, I'm pretty confident, but now I'm not so sure I'm confident. And I feel like every developer goes through that phase where you just finally learn enough to realize how incompetent you are.
Yeah, know, like, it's a normal feeling. For
oh, it's totally normal.
Age.
Yeah, no, even me, daily, I'm sitting here like, I don't know how to write code, man. Like, what is this programming thing? But I remember, and still sometimes will get way overconfident in something, you know?
And then you're like, oh, that's right. I've never implemented OAuth. Wah, wah.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just, it's a big industry and you're never done, you know? You're never done learning and you're never done cleaning up or polishing.
So
your
what
code,
would you tell Matt? Should he just keep at it or should he, or would it be worth to like buy a book and learn that way? Or
see, I think the best way to learn is via the heuristic style learning, you know, exactly what he's doing. But the problem is with experience is just because you do something for 15 years doesn't mean that you have 15 years of experience because you could have repeated, the same year. Over and over and over again. So
sure.
You're really dealing with a year of experience because you really are just, you know, you're not looking back and asking yourself the questions, how can I iterate, or exposing yourself to, I mean, if you're listening to shows like this, you know, Chris Coyer and, I mean, Chris Coyer is like kind of like a master teacher, right? He's, but I also look at Chris Coyer as a guy that's constantly learning because he just shares what he learns. And I think that that's what you have to do. You have to expose yourself to feedback. Like when Chris Coyer writes a blog post or makes a code pen, he's subjecting himself to a lot of people being like, what is this? You know, like, don't you know that you should do it this way? And granted, that rarely happens because he's been doing it for a long time and he's
not
really
true.
Talented. But you got to expose yourself to feedback and you have to want to get better, you know?
Maybe that's a good advice for Matt, that maybe to round out your experience of build is to maybe slow down and write about it a little bit. Maybe that'll clarify some thinking.
I think this is a pendulum, just like I think lots of stuff in our industry is a pendulum. We kind of swing back and forth between thick and thin clients. I think individually people swing back and forth between just ship it and like becoming an architecture astronaut. And both have their strengths and weaknesses, and you learn different things. But I think you learn by going through cycles where, I mean, you really only learn about like scalability and deploying by doing it. You can read stuff about it, but until you fight fires with it, you don't really know it. And same thing with all the front end stuff too. But you can also swing back the other way and read some more of the theory and books and podcasts and take in more information. Yeah. I think an environment to experiment with trying more clean coding type stuff, I say that with air quotes, is open source, right? Like products are where you have deadlines and external pressures, and open source is where you get to craft this beautiful masterpiece that no one can force you to release before it's early, and you can like have 110% unit test coverage or whatever. Like whatever your thing you're trying to work on is. So I think there's a lot of value in learning through doing open source and trying to make the code or whatever engineering practices you're trying to learn, like polish those in open source and apply them in products.
Yeah. I like that. And I think he's, you know, he's probably doing great if he's, you know, just cranking out websites and looking at it from an eye of what did I pick up this time around.
Yeah,
that's good. Well, cool. Awesome. I think we've answered it up, unless Chris, you wanted to say one more thing.
Nope, I'm clear. Something. Let's pick one. Let's.
That was the first time I'd heard the term architecture astronaut. I really like that.
I did too.
Is that somebody's like super type A about how good it looks?
I think it's kind of the people that like make UML diagrams and just sit and like drag cards around on whiteboards and never actually make stuff.
Yeah, they talk at a very high level.
Yeah, that's he'll good. Talk to you about.
Oh man, do I know the type. All right,
I want to be that.
Hey guys, I whipped out some sweet UMD diagrams last night. I saw you guys take a look. It's like the worst thing anyone can ever say to you.
Guys, I got some new flows I'd like to discuss.
Whoa, boy. You're going to hear the words decoupled a lot when you're talking to those guys.
That's good. All right. So in the spirit of a crossover episode. Oh, geez. So we need to take a piece of your show, JS Jabber, and inject it into our show. So every week you guys end your show with some picks. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
So how does it work? Walk us through it. Take us on a journey.
Jameson, you want to take this over?
Yeah, the journey is you pick something that you liked that week, or maybe that you liked earlier and only remembered in the last 5 seconds when you have to pick something. It's just like a cool thing that you read or listened to or ate. Hopefully not the same thing for all three of those. Like I do music a lot because I like music. Chuck will do like his car that he fixed or something. I don't know. Just something cool that you think other people might like.
I like it.
Does Chuck know anything about 2006 Honda G6s?
I think he does. I think he's the man for that question.
Oh, wow. All right. We'll save it. All right. So who goes first? Who's Jameson?
I'll go first.
Okay. Show us how it's done.
First. I've been listening to a lot of LCD Sound System.
Oh, nice.
Band. They're like, I mean, they're not super cool and hip and new because they've been around for a while, but I just started listening to them this week and I liked them a lot. So I'm going to pick Sound of Silver, which is an album by LCD Sound System. It's good, like, grooving music.
If you search for them on iTunes, you know, it shows like the most popular stuff first, and they're all tracks from that album. So clearly you agree with the other people who use iTunes.
Sweet. Nice to be one of the herd.
Yes. All right, Merrick, you go.
Okay, so I have two picks. One of them is a shameless plug, which is ngConf, coming up in January. It's an Angular conference that Matt, me, and some friends are putting on, and I'm stoked for that.
So to play on the youth, there's all those ng attributes that you need when you were.
That's exactly what it is. Yes, ng-conf.org, and it's like it's a play on everything is prefixed with ng because they don't have proper namespacing, but. It's going to be awesome. I like that I just jabbed the same thing I'm putting a conference on for, but I do love Angular, and it's going to be a really fun conference.
We'll send you a bill.
Yeah, please. The other thing is that I'm gonna do the cheesy thing. I'm gonna pick the Shop Talk show because I feel like you guys have such a polished operation. Like when I went to your website and I saw this. You know, upcoming show.
Your name and lights.
I did, dude. I looked at Jay's Jabber and I was like, man, we're a bunch of poppers. We gotta pick up our act. You know, the competition's hot. So those are my two picks.
Good. I can go. I have two, if that's all right. I'm not breaking the rules here. webaudiodemos.appspot.com. I think it's by this guy, Chris Wilson, I believe is who it is. And it's basically just a bunch of new web audio experiments. And like I'm just like super geeking out about what you can do with the web audio. I woke up at like 6 a.m. So I was just doing dumb stuff, but, and like there's some cool stuff. Like he has this one, I forget which one it is. It's like he made a synthesizer, and then like there's like pitch detection so you could like tune your guitar with it. There's like there's one where he just totally, it's like all this like wicked effects that you can throw on stuff. There's like a vocoder. I really like that. And then there's another one I'm still thinking about it, but I retweeted it the other day. It's on this. The kids should see this or something. But it's about, this dad who like used 3D printers to build his son a prosthetic hand.
What?
So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty epic. Yeah. I can share the link in the chat room, but,
Dad of the Year award.
Awesome. Dude, he was just like, the guy was like, you know, he can, and the thing with like prosthetic hands is like, they have to grow as like the kid grows like finger size, you know? And so he was just like, how do I, you know, that's really expensive to buy a new one every year. It's like $20,000, or I could have a $2,000 3D printer with $5 worth of raw material. And I just build it. And like the kid, if you watch it or like listen to the full story or whatever, he's like at school, like kids are like, that's so cool. You're like a cyborg.
Yeah, like a bionic man.
It's
nice
that his classmates thought it was cool and not weird, you know?
Like, yeah, they're just like,
dodge that bullet. They were terrified.
It'll be cool when flesh is one of the things that you can put in the pot for 3D printers. Just like a real hand. All right.
I'm looking forward to like 3D printed food, like food replicators. I just, hamburger. I'm printing out a hamburger.
For you put a cow in one side. They might already have that. Oh, good pick, Dave's. Good pick, everybody. I freaked out. I didn't know what to pick. So I'm just going to use some real life things that's happening to me right now. Is that I ordered a standing desk and it'll be my first. And I'm on a little bit of a health kick. I thought it might be a cool thing to try. So I ordered one from nextdesks.com. They look good. They have a little, they're kind of like, you don't have to go all in. It's got a up and downy thing. So if I'm not able to go all day at first, I can lower it down. Anyway, I was pretty excited about it. The desk looks really nice, but I paid for the on-site assembly because it's like, oh, what the heck, you know, at least then they'll set it up correctly, you know, I won't have to screw it up. when it arrives, or take all day and get all frustrated and or whatever. And then it arrived, and the delivery dude was like, "What are you talking about? I won't even take this into your house." He like left it on the left it on the sidewalk, and it's like incredibly heavy. So I was like lugging it in. I ended up giving the guy $10 to help me bring it in the house. He didn't want to do it because it's like a liability thing or whatever. I'm like, dude, I'll give you $10 then. Anyway, so I whined about it on, because I literally paid for the assembly from Nexus. I whined about it on Twitter, and they immediately replied, and they even called me up to explain. They didn't exactly, they're just going to refund me. They don't assemble it for you because they can't, because I live in Milwaukee, and it's not like they have people in Milwaukee that can just drive over on command and help set up my desk. You know, like these on-site assembly, like how can they possibly guarantee that anywhere in the world? And the answer is they can't. So it's weird they even take money for it. So hopefully they'll fix it on their website. It was $150.
Woo.
I know, it's a lot, but I was like, at least they'll do it right. And I don't know. It's just, it's nice. I hope the desk is nice, the pending review. But I did like at least that they were honest and are going to do the right thing by refunding me and were quick about it. So good support, NextDesk. So do you want to wrap us up, Dave?
Yeah, that's it. Guys, thank you so much for coming onto the show. And if people aren't following you on Twitter or listening to JS Jabber, how do they do that?
Take it away, Merrick.
Oh, so I am on Twitter. I am Merrick, M-E-R-R-I-C-K. And go to jsjabber.com and hopefully you like the show. You can subscribe. We do it every week and we release on the Fridays. So I am grateful to have been here. So, Jameson?
I just got to correct Merrick. It's actually javascriptjabber.com.
Son of a...
Jabber is
thank you.
Not a real thing. If you want to spot that domain, though, you might be able to export some money.
Thank you for correcting that.
No problem. So I'm going to just plug my Twitter, which is Jergason, J-E-R-G-A-S-O-N. I have a blog too, jamesondance.com. It's very, very neglected. It's a sad blog, but I'll get some more stuff up on there sometime. And that's it.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show again. Thanks everyone for coming out in the chat room. You guys supplied some very nice facts. We really appreciate that. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Rate us a 500 in iTunes or whatever podcast app you use. And we still have a store, shoptalkshow.com/store, where you can get a cool t-shirt. And Chris, you got anything else?
Shoptalkshow.com.